ask you about the Wolves boys. Are they doing all right these days? Are they going to be okay with that? That's all the cold leases and everything they are.
Oh, Jack and Pete?
Yeah.
I was working in Casper when John and James made the first congressional appointment. I asked him to come with me.
Yeah.
He should have never run for the Senate. He'd still be on the House.
Senator, will please come to order. We're at that order of businesses. Do we have any messages from the House?
From the House of Representatives, February 18, 2016, message number 118, third reading passed. Mr. President, the bill listed below passed the House on third reading. House Bill number 87, School Finance Non-Residence Attendance. Ayes 58, noes 1, excused 1. Sincerely, Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. Third reading passed amended. Mr. President, the bill listed below passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill 35, Pharmacy Benefit Manager Regulation. Ayes 45, noes 14, excused 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. Again, third reading passed amended, Mr. President. House Bill number 52, School Facilities Appropriations 3, ayes 57, noes 2, excused 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. Mr. President, the bill listed below passed the House on third reading in an amended form. House Bill number 53, Special Districts Task Force, ayes 46, noes 13, excused 1. Sincerely, Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. Mr. President, the bill listed below passed the House on third reading in an amended form. House Joint Resolution number 2, Kenny Sailor's Naismith Hall of Fame, ayes 59, noes 0, excused 1. Sincerely, Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. Mr. President, the bill listed below passed the House on third reading amended. House Joint Resolution number 4, Gray Wolves and Grizzly Bears, ayes 56, noes 3, excused 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. Bill listed below passed House on third reading amended. House Bill number 31, Uniform Securities Act, ayes 58, noes 1, excused 1. Sincerely, signed Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. And passing on third reading amended, House Bill number 9, Tribal License Plates, ayes 43, noes 16, excused 1. Signed Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Presidential Committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 94, Payment for Educational Services, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 72, 70 miles per hour speed limit, state highways, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman.
Members of the Senate, we've ordered pizza. It's going to be here about 6:30, so plan on working a little late tonight. And with that, Senator Coe, we're ready for bills on general file. Just a second, Senator Coe. Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I move that the Senate resolve itself back into Committee of the Whole.
You heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Case. Give her a hand, would you?
The Committee of the Whole will come to order. The first file for our consideration is Senate File 60. The reading clerk will read the file.
Senate File 60, Public Health Nursing, an act relating to public health and safety, sponsored by the Labor Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, which returned the committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Boner, Kraft, Driscoll, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
For the reading of the file, what is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move within the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so the recommendation that Senate File 60 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment. I ask it be read in at this time.
Go ahead.
Senate File 60, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 4, line 16.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, and for an explanation of the Standing Committee Amendment and the Senate file, I yield to Senator Kraft.
Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. With your pleasure, I would like to deal with the Standing Committee Amendment first. This is a bill addressing the issue of public health nursing, and the Standing Committee Amendment is actually a clarification amendment. It just makes things much clearer and much simpler. It was suggested that instead of the original language in the bill, we talk about the state of Wyoming personnel rules. So the amendment is basically clarification and technical in nature, if you will. And unless there are any questions, I would call for the question on the standing committee amendment.
Questions on the amendment? Questions on the amendment. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt the standing committee amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is carried. Back to you, Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. This is an issue that I've been involved with in one way or another ever since I first came down to the legislature quite a while ago. The problem is that we have public health nurses that work in all of our counties, but they're administered in a variety of different ways. Some of them are county employees. Some of them are state employees, and some of them are kind of a combination. So as you might guess, that's created a great deal of difficulty in how the entire public health nursing program is administered. So we struggled with that for a number of years and finally turned it over to the county commissioners. And they've been working on it for several years also and finally came back with a plan that we think works beautifully, that they worked very hard on, and that seems to really address the issue that we're not a one-size-fits-all state, that different counties have different needs and we need options. So that's what the bill in front of you does. It provides options to our local health departments and our counties. There's three of them, actually. You can have a partnership where you and the state are partnered in this. You can have a state-administered system with a county contribution, or you can have a state contract with the county. So the counties, in this piece of legislation, make their choice. And that will need to be finalized by July 1st of 2018. And each option requires a memorandum of understanding between the county and the Department of Health. So what it does is it gives them the ability to choose the right model that best fits their need and to negotiate through this memorandum of understanding terms that work for both parties. The bill also offers some alternative funding methods to counties and basically just ensures the continuity of public health services throughout the state in all 23 counties in whichever of those three option forms the county themselves choose. That's the bill in a nutshell, and with that explanation, I would stand for any questions.
Questions. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I would just add two things. One, there was a sunset date in the bill we passed 2 years ago, and so this bill is necessary because otherwise things will sunset and you're going to have a mess there. Second, I want to publicly, Mr. Chairman, commend the County Commissioners Association that worked very closely at our request on this, that has done an excellent job in straightening out this thing that's been a mess for so many years. That association did very good work in this area, and it's a joint committee bill, but the county commissioners deserve most of the credit, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Further discussion on the bill?
I have a question.
Seeing none, the question is Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 60. All those in favor do so by signifying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 60 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 97. The reading clerk will read the file.
Senate File 97, Student and School Safety Call Center, an act relating to education, sponsored by Senator Coe. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, which returns a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Coe, Dockstader, Landon, Pappas, and Rothfuss. Senator Coe, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Senator Coe?
Mr. Chairman, moving the Committee of the Whole rise and report do so with do pass recommendation on Senate File 97. Members of the Senate, I'll try to be as brief as I can. This is a program. First of all, this bill is significantly different than the bill that the Joint Education Committee sponsored. This brings back, for your consideration, 2 years of interim work by the Joint Education Committee. And I have to say that a large majority of the Joint Education Committee worked hard on this, and we became somewhat passionate about the successes that we'd heard about. Basically, Senate File 97 takes the student and the Student Safety Call Center bill and assigns that to the Attorney General's office. You'll see that on page, let's see where that is exactly, page 2, paragraph I. It assigns it to the Attorney General's office to implement what they want to implement, what program they decide to implement. They work in conjunction with the Department of Homeland Security. This is an interesting part of the bill because, first of all, there's no money appropriated in this bill. It's permissive language for the Department of Homeland Security to participate with two positions, if they so choose to, funded totally with federal monies. There's a reporting requirement back on the bill, and you'll see that on page 3, and the bottom of page 3 and the top of page 4. They report back on the effectiveness of the program to JAC and JEC. So, Mr. Chairman, from a policy standpoint, it provides a safe channel for our kids to report incidents before they occur. And I want to emphasize right here that on most of the occasions that the bad events that have happened in this country, somebody else knew about it. In nearly all the school shootings around the nation, someone other than the shooter knew. So this provides a means for kids to report. This does not have any particular vendor in it. It doesn't name any particular program. It assigns it to the Attorney General. There's no money in it. It's permissive for Homeland Security. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd answer questions on the bill.
Any questions for Senator Coe? Any questions? Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and I'll be brief, but our chairman is exactly right. After a couple of years of working on this issue, we have become pretty passionate about it. I commend the two agencies that came together to find us a way to get this position funded in the way that it is, and I really commend that to you. But I just wanted to hearken back about 10 days ago on a Friday night. I made the drive home and sat with my bride watching a program that happened to be about the disaster in the state to our south at a high school called Columbine. I don't know if any of you had the opportunity to see that. I hope and wish that you could. If you didn't, it was absolutely heart-wrenching, and it was so telling of what we're talking about with this piece of legislation, Senators. There were so many pieces of the puzzle that simply were not discovered there. And we just believe in our hearts that's exactly what that's going to cure, what this call center is going to cure, Mr. Chairman. It's going to help us to put a couple pieces together at some point in the future, and we're going to save a life. We might save a lot of lives. I want to tell one more anecdotal story that came to us from the state from the south. They got a tip from a young man in the state of Mississippi who explained to them that he was playing one of those video games with people from all over the United States, and they happened to be playing with somebody in Colorado. And that young man from Mississippi called the call number, called this center down in the state to our south, explained that to them, and they really believe that they intercepted a young man who was going to take his own life. There are a lot more stories that we heard in testimony, fellow senators, but I commend the bill to you. I think it's a good one. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. Any further questions on the bill? Any further questions on the bill? The question is on Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 97. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 97 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 18. Would the reading clerk please read the file?
Senate File 18, Competitive Bid Specification Requirements, an act relating to capital construction, sponsored by Senator Peterson, was recommended to Committee Number 9, referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, who returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Anderson, Coe, Cooper, and Rothfuss. No, Senator Von Flatern. Senator Von Flatern, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure? Senator Von Flatern. Senate File 18.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 18, Competitive Bid Specification Requirements. There is an amendment to this bill, and I yield the floor to Senator Peterson to...
Thank you. Senator Peterson, would you like the amendment read in?
I sure would, Mr. Chairman.
Senate File 18, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 4.
Back to you, Senator Peterson.
I'd move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, Mr. Chairman, and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Folks, this is an amendment that the committee basically removed the last section. If you refer to the bill itself, it's the meat of it is page 3, starting on line 14 through 22, is deleted. It was an attempt admittedly, not a very good attempt to shoot a shot across the bow of some of our manufacturers who offer what we term as closed lines. In other words, a Wyoming dealer is not able to supply those lines, and so it basically directs a lot of these bids to out-of-state vendors. And it was an attempt to shoot a shot across the bow of some of these out-of-state manufacturers and basically make the statement that if you're not going to do business in Wyoming with a dealer, then don't bother selling your product in our state. It did add an additional 5%. The committee felt that was a little extreme, as so did I. But if there's anybody on the floor that can think of a better solution, my hats would be off to you. But anyway, that is the amendment, and I'd ask the body's favorable consideration on this amendment and stand for any questions on the amendment.
Questions on the amendment? Any questions on the amendment? Seeing none, the question is on Senator Peterson's motion that we adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, the Senate File 18. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Back to you, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's also a Committee of the Whole amendment. I would ask for that amendment to be read in at this time.
Go ahead.
Senate File 18, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 3, line 12.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 18. Again, ask for the body's favorable consideration. This amendment basically tries to nail down the definition of agency on page 3, line 12. Yes. We add this wording. As used in this subdivision, agency means any department, agency, or other instrumentality of the state or of a political subdivision of the state to which funds are appropriated or authorized for expenditure for capital construction projects, and includes any entity that the agency contracts with to administer or award any bid. If you look up on that page, on line 3 on page 3, it uses the term agency, and it didn't really fit because we have schools, architects, design groups, could be any one of a number of different contractors that are hired by the school district to administer the bid. So this clarifies, adds better definition to the word agency. We left the word agency in line 3 and also on line 4, and it just was for more clarification, and I would answer any questions if anybody has questions on this amendment.
Questions on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. Any questions? Seeing none, the question is on Senator Peterson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole, or to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 18. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Back on the bill. Anything else on the bill? So I've got a question over here, Senator Peterson. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, quick question. I noticed that with the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, it's now an immediately effective bill. Is that going to cause trouble with bids that are in process and are coming up? In other words, do we need to go back to the July 1 date just to give people outside the government some warning and give all the various government agencies and whatnot, anybody that's involved, some warning? Is the immediate effective date going to cause trouble?
And then Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to answer that particular question, I recommend that we do this immediately. There's going to be a lot of projects that happen. Most of our bidding and of FF&E and buildings in general bid in the time period between the end of our deliberations and July 1. And so I think this would be very beneficial to both the designers and to the folks that are purchasing FF&E equipment. So I would recommend we keep that language.
Thank you, Senator Pappas. Anybody else? Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was the one no vote in committee, and the reason I voted no on this bill, although I believe it's not a bad idea, I think it just had a lot of issues encompassed in it. And when I was my short time on appropriations, we actually spent 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 hours discussing this legislation prior to this this amendment to that legislation, where we talked about the suppliers and so and how to do it, where you balance the taxpayers paying extra to get something that you receive from a Wyoming vendor, or maybe the vendor was out of state, but we want to at least level the playing field, so we said you had to specify FF&E that matched something you could buy in Wyoming. So we spent hours and hours, and we only had, you know, our half hour or whatever in committee, plus the time that this good sponsor brought this bill. So that for that, I think we moved too quickly on this. I think there's holes in the bill, and I'd ask the body to be careful on it.
Thank you, Senator. Any other discussion, Senator Landon?
You know, I certainly understand the reticence on the part of my friend from Campbell County, but I just wanted to represent as select committee chair for school facilities that this is probably the one issue that generated the most phone calls over the past year to my residents. Quite a bit of frustration out there from the big project level all the way down to FF&E with money going out of state. I commend the sponsor. I agree with our Campbell County senator. It may not be perfect. It might not quite be there yet, but I suspect that it's kind of like one of those water balloons. When you grab it here, it's going to blow up over here. So I really think we're always going to have work to do on this particular issue, in-state versus out-of-state. How do we try to take care of our Wyoming companies? But I think this is a good fix for now, Mr. Chairman, on and for the bill.
Thank you. Any further discussion on the bill? Anything else on the bill? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Briefly, there were three basic areas I was trying to help resolve in this bill. One was removed, and that was the manufactured closed lines. The first one was the generic wording on the front or the bottom of page 2. That word generic, and this was, again, I remind the body that this has been an ongoing process for the past probably 15 years. The legislature makes changes to the bidding process. We knew there was problems out there, and so a select committee was actually formed. And we tried to tie down the residency status, if you recall that, and other things. Then the Appropriations Committee took it, and they were still having some problems. So the good senator from Natrona County is right. It is. We try to attack a certain problem, and then something else explodes on the side. I could share the last 15 years of experiences of trying to bid on these projects, Mr. Chairman, and it would make the hair on the back of your heads raise up, and you'd become as frustrated as some of these Wyoming bidders have been. A lot of games have been played, Mr. Chairman, and wrong games, and games that have tried to direct business to out-of-state vendors, out-of-state architects, out-of-state design groups, and it's just been, in for lack of a better word, pathetic. And so we need to do something. And so on the bottom of page 2, we strike the word generic, And what this has caused is you can imagine trying to bid on a project that a specific manufacturer has not been listed. The problem was not so much the listing the specific manufacturer of a desk or a chair. The problem was identifying the specific manufacturer and then not allowing substitutes. And that game was being played. That would lock out every Wyoming vendor. So the problem was not listing the specific manufacturer. The problem was not allowing substitutes. So we want to strike that word generic. We need to know what the buyer is looking at, what they're specifying. That would clean up our bids immensely. That's why, Mr. Chairman, I've had call after call and email after email of design groups, architects saying, we need this bill immediately to clean up this hole that we've got right now. The second thing that still remains in the bill that is still a problem is a practice that they were doing. As we talked about these closed lines of product, they would insert one of these closed lines, let's say a chair, in a bid group. A bid group is a section within the bid that might be in a certain location of the building where they want all fabrics, all colors, all styles to match. So they include that in a bid group. Well, they put this closed line product within that bid group, and you can imagine what the effect is. Now nobody in Wyoming as a Wyoming vendor can bid on that particular bid group. They could bid on the other 14 items, but they couldn't bid on that 15th item. And so that was then excluded for any Wyoming vendor. So that's been the concern. You might ask yourselves how big of a problem this is. The latest bid that was released just a few weeks ago north of here, large high school project, 18 different categories. And one of those categories out of the 18 totaled, I think the winning bid was about $750,000. One category out of 18. This is a big problem. And it's money leaving our state faster than we can generate it. And I'd appreciate your support on this important bill.
Any other discussion on the file? Any other? So, Senator Peters, I warn you that some of us don't have hair that can rise up on the back of our neck, so be careful with those kind of references.
I apologize, Mr. Chairman.
So the question is on Senator Von Flatern's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 18. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 18 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 65.
Senate File 65, Patent Trolling, an act relating to patent infringement, sponsored by Senator Case. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Anderson, Coe, Cooper, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern. Senator Von Flatern, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Senator Von Flatern? I'm sorry, I better get you some microphone. Hold on.
That'll be good. I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that they do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 65, Patent Trolling. And there is an amendment. I'd like it read in at this time.
Senate File 65, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 9, line 20.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I move Standing Committee Number 1 amendment to Senate File 65. And I'd like to dispense with that amendment right now. So I'll tell you, it goes on page 9, after line 20. After code, you insert, or section 262 of Title 42 of the United States Code. And what that is in this patent bill, we wanted to make sure we included big pharmacy companies, intellectual patents, and drug patents that they may have. So as far as the trolling of patents would be concerned, they would be included. So that's all it does, is add that section, which is different than the other section of the federal regulations on all other patents. So with that, I'll stand for question and ask for the question on this.
Any questions on the amendment? Any discussion on the amendment? The question is on Senator Von Flatern's motion that we adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 65. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Back to you, Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a bill sponsored by yourself, and I don't think I can quite do it as eloquently as you would. But I would tell you that patent trolling at the beginning of it, this is an act related to somebody just calling out of the blue and saying, whatever you do for a living, I have a patent on it, and it may be as simple as your software and your copier or scanner machine. It may be the controller on your petroleum pumps out in front of your office. And since you didn't pay me for this patent, I'm willing to license it to you, or I want $100,000 or whatever that monetary amount may be for you to be able to still use what you've been using all along. So that's what the bill goes after, is those people that make these calls, letters, emails, claiming something that may not be correct, and then called bad faith assertion of patent infringement. So the beginning of the bill on page 2 gives you a little bit of definitions of what the demand letters are or emails that you may receive. Then it goes down to define the target being that person that receives those demand letters, emails, and tells you what how they would be considered the target, and they would have a bad faith assertion of a patent infringement upon them. They're the target. And then facts on B on page 3, a court may consider any of the following factors as evidence that a person has made a bad faith assertion of patent infringement. So you go through page 3, page 4, it tells you what constitutes, what the court can consider when you bring that countersuit, basically, or you bring it in front of your lawyer, who then brings a suit against them and says they didn't calculate the real cost, they don't have the true patent, or their patent is so far away from what I do that it has nothing to do with me. But they're trolling. They're looking for you to quickly pay them off, possibly, and instead of hiring your own attorney and fighting it in court. It goes down further to page 6 on little c there, and it says a court may consider one of the following factors as evidence that a person has not made a bad faith effort or bad faith assertion of a patent infringement. So right there we're trying to lay out what we don't want to stop somebody that truly has a patent infringement against their patent, somebody using their product or using their intellectual ideas or something in the course of their business. We want to say those people are not doing anything wrong, and that follows on page 6 down to page 7 on 40-1-203, private right of action. This is where we talk about in violation article may bring an action in a court. So if you are a target and you feel that you have done something, you have not done anything wrong, and these people are trolling, this says you may bring an action in court. And a court may award any of the following remedies: damages, costs and fees, including reasonable attorney fees, and exemplary damages in the amount equal to $50,000. Enforcement, that's law section 4-1-204, may enforce the provisions of this article. Attorney general may do it. And then I believe it even says in any competent court of competent jurisdiction for any violation, so they can't say we're in Washington, D.C., you have to come back here to get us. If they made the assertion out here, you can take them to court here. If we don't have this law, what we set ourselves up in our state for is these trolls to even be able to do it without worried about retribution, because we don't have a state law until this moment. Or if this passes, then we'd have a state law. Exemptions are at the bottom where it doesn't apply to the person that owns or has the rights to the license. Line 20 of page 9 is where we inserted that amendment to say that the Title 35 plus Chapter 262 of Title 42 was put in. And on the last page, which is page 10, a demand letter sent by the following. And these are recognized institutions. So if they send you a letter, they cannot be considered patent trolling if they're a recognized institution. And that's the owner of the patent that is using the patent in connection with substantial research, commercial development, production, manufacturing, processing, or delivery of products or materials, or any institution of higher education. And we would hope that our university doesn't try to supplement their budget by sending out these false inquiries or assertions that you're infringing upon a patent that they don't own. So many institutions do own patents. Our university is one of them, and they share the patents with others, or they license the patent to others. But they do have own quite a bit of these patents. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I will sit down, and hopefully I've answered most of everybody's question.
Thank you. Questions for anyone? Any discussion? Questions? Are you ready for the vote? Who? Okay. The question is on Senator Von Flatern's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 65. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 65 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 102.
Senate File 102, Federal Funds Distribution, an act relating to public funds, sponsored by Senator Ross. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation of do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger. Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Senator Ross?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 102. This bill is the federal distribution bill. What it basically does, folks, is that when we get pennies from heaven, basically, or pennies from the federal government, it sets up a federal funds holding account. So when those funds are received by the state of Wyoming, which are not allocated to a specific program or account, they will be placed into this federal funds holding account, and they shall include such things like when we talked about the introduction of this bill, I talked about like ARRA money. When the ARRA money comes in and doesn't have any strings attached to it necessarily or is identified to a specific account, it would go into this account. And so and it also includes any monies that may have been sequestered that were due to the state of Wyoming or from the sale of a federal mineral sales on federally mineral leases. So the funds are put into this account and then shall only be dispersed or expended upon appropriation of the legislature. So Section 2 creates 92105. The governor shall not expend or authorize the expenditure of any funds from the federal holdings account absent legislative approval. And specifically referent, and he must specifically reference an appropriation of these funds from that account. He may not expend or otherwise authorize expenditure of federal funds in excess of the amounts approved by the legislature, by the Legislative Appropriations Act, except in accordance with subsection G. Subsection G basically says that he has the opportunity to expend those funds if they are allocated to a specific program or an account by the state or federal law for which the legislature has previously appropriated funds in the fiscal biennium in which funds are accepted. So this basically is talking about when we're not in session, what he can or cannot do. And then it does go on to say that in Romanet 2 on page 4, the expenditure of federal funds the expenditure of other federal funds, if the governor determines the receipt of the federal funds, is conditioned upon an expenditure of those funds prior to convening the next session, then he may do so. Funds authorized to be expended pursuant to this paragraph shall be reported and provided in this subsection and deposited not only into the account, but it will report them to us so that we know what he has done during that time. Any amount not in excess of the funds deposited is appropriated for expenditure from that account, cannot be done without further legislative action. So basically it just codifies what we think is important to us as a legislative body in terms of controlling the funds that come in and require legislative appropriation, which is our job, folks. That's the one hammer that we do have is the budget. And I'd urge your favorable consideration.
Thank you, Senator. Questions for the Senator? Any questions? Seeing none. The question is on Senator Ross's motion when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 102. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 102 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 70. The reading clerk will read the file.
Senate File 70, Off-Road Recreation Vehicles, an act relating to motor vehicles, sponsored by Senator Burns. It was referred to Committee Number 8, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Boner, Emmerich, Escobel, Johnson, and Meyer. Senator Meyer, Chairman.
Which one is this? For the reading of the file, what is your pleasure, Senator Meyer?
Okay. I'm moving the committee to hold rise and report it do so with a do pass motion on Senate File 70, Off-Road Vehicles, and defer to the good senator from Jordan to explain this bill.
Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I have privilege of the floor before I go into the bill.
Yes, you may.
Sitting over in the fish tank here are the trustees from Sheridan College. There's too numerous to name, but if they would just stand up and we can welcome them, please.
Hey. Welcome to the Senate.
Senator Burns, I always find that I'm under a lot of pressure when I have folks from the glass looking in at me and listening to every word I'm saying, but you may go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, it happens to me all the time. I ask them not to tap on the glass, but they still do.
Go ahead, Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, Senate File Number 70, Off-Road Recreational Vehicles. Mr. Chairman, what this does is basically, as I said when we first went with the bill for, not initiation, but for introduction, as I pointed out, this bill clarifies the role of the Department of Transportation as to off-road vehicles. ATVs are mentioned about five or six times throughout the statutes, but there's nowhere that specifically states that they can set ATV trails within the rights of way. We have a situation up in the Bighorn Mountains where people are either going between lodges that are people are either going on the highway or they've created their own ATV trails, both of which are extremely dangerous. Because it's on the right of way goes through private property, the Forest Service cannot put ATV trails beside the right of way. There are other situations like this throughout the state, and so this bill was crafted with LSO and with YDOT so that it's a permissive bill and allows them. Doesn't really expand their authority, but more clarifies it than anything. And with that, if anybody would like any further, have any further questions, I'd be glad to answer.
Questions for the Senator. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, a number of those of us in agriculture use ATVs all the time, and where we have a state highway coming right through the property, we do tend to run ATVs right down the borrow pit. It's safer than running them up on the surface. Does this affect that practice in any way?
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, no, it does not. As a matter of fact, the practice that the good tall senator from Natrona County is talking about is that mentioned in statute of ATVs as farm vehicles, and they are allowed to go a certain distance actually on the roadway and still be considered farm vehicles. That's the interesting thing about ATVs. They're viewed in laws about three or four different legal entities.
Thank you, Senator Burns. Anybody else? There's a Committee of the Whole amendment. Shall we deal with that? Please read it in.
Senate File 70, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 18.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 70. Members of the body, I'll be brief here. This is a good piece of legislation. Want it to pass. The only thing this does is just bring in some language to clarify to YDOT that by no means, it just says nothing in this paragraph shall deem it to authorize the department to acquire or expand any public road right-of-way in order to accommodate or operate off-road vehicles. Just want to make clear to the YDOT that they can't go acquire more property to facilitate these trails. Good legislation. Would urge you to pass it and ask for your favorable consideration of this amendment.
Discussion on the amendment. Discussion on the amendment. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I think I understand what the maker of the amendment is after, but let me ask a question. If there was some mechanism whereby they were acquiring the right-of-way from the feds, or would that do any harm?
Anybody else? Senator Hicks, if you can.
Mr. Chairman, the way I read the amendment is if it was specifically for the purpose of widening that right-of-way to accommodate ATVs, this legislation wouldn't authorize that. I don't think they would preclude them from doing that, but they couldn't do it specifically for the purpose just to establish an ATV trail.
Okay, thank you, Senator Hicks. Further discussion on the amendment? Further discussion on the amendment? The question is on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 70. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is carried. Back on the bill. Anything else on the bill? Ready for the question? Yes. The question is on Senator Meyer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 70. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 70 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 58.
Senate File 58, Involuntary Hospitalization and Treatment, an act relating to hospitalization and treatment of mentally ill persons, sponsored by the Labor Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, which respectfully returned a report back of due pass with amended. Ayes, Senators Boner, Kraft, Driscoll, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 58 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment, and I ask it be read in at this time.
Senate File 58, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 9.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, and Mr. Chairman, I yield to Senator Peterson for an excellent explanation of this excellent Senate file.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Basically, the amendment attacks two things. This is, again, the bill from the task force and the Labor and Health Committee for a year, our good chair of JAC co-chaired this task force. We discovered a few things that were lacking in our care of these patients under Title 25 in the state of Wyoming, and the evidence is we have a $25 million overrun this budget session, or this budget year that we're currently in. What we discovered was some of the surrounding states around us actually have just the opposite attack plan as we do here in Wyoming. 70% of their budgets go towards outpatient treatment, more so on the incoming phase of these treatments rather than the outgoing. And then 30% of their budgets go towards the end of the more expensive intensive inpatient treatments. In Wyoming, it's just the opposite. 75% of our budget's going towards inpatient treatment and only about 25% going towards outpatient. So we saw that as a problem. What this amendment does, and then I'll cover the bill a little bit later, but in explanation of the amendment so we can get this out of the way, we introduce a concept called the gatekeeper, a single point of source for information and coordination through all these different players that are involved in Title 25 process in our counties. Everybody from the judge, county attorney, providers, assessors, facilities, treatment centers, hospitals, law enforcement, you name it, and everybody seems to be involved in Title 25 in one way or another. To get all these players on the same page, we thought a gatekeeper would be critical, and on line 26 on page 1 of our amendment, we tried to define what gatekeeper means. We also, in this amendment, try to realize that every county is different, with different facilities, different tools available, different ways to try to treat Title 25, and we try to bring everyone on the same page, but still leaving the side barriers, the guidelines, so it didn't eliminate any counties from doing their job. And so we come up with terms like, instead of like in line 33 and 34, 35, the department with respect to hospitals or other treatment providers instead of facilities, other than the state hospital shall. So we insert that wording to allow each county to use providers if they don't have a treatment center. Turning the page on the amendment, 3i, enter into contracts or agreements with designated hospitals or other treatment providers again. On line 12 of the amendment, 4i, require information from designated hospitals, other treatment providers, and outpatient care providers, including mental health centers. So we tried to include this wording to broaden it just a little bit, but still in the effort to keep everybody on the same page. And then the meat of this amendment is basically lines 30 throughout the last page, and this is where we introduce the gatekeeping concept. And before I go into that, the task force, as I explained on this on introduction, Mr. Chairman, the task force had the gatekeeper concept attached to the payment reform plan that we were discussing at the same time. We felt that the payment reform plan wasn't quite ready for prime time for this session. We have another year on this task force, and so we decided to pull that idea, and so thus went out the gatekeeper concept as well. But I assure you that you could talk to anybody on this task force, and they would probably insist that the gatekeeper is a critical part of what we discovered that was necessary and needed to solve our present concerns with Title 25. So in letter G, section G, we lay out each Board of County Commissioners may establish a single point of responsibility. So the first 72 hours, we didn't change that. It's still on the County Commissioners. And basically, the County Commissioners would contract with this gatekeeper. After that first 72 hours, this gatekeeper is going to be working both for the county and the state, because after the first 72 hours, then all these costs are on the state. Basically, the idea of the gatekeeper is we want somebody at the table conferring, communicating with not just the judges but the county attorney, getting reports, making suggestions. Now, there are some concerns out there that the gatekeeper is going to override county attorneys. Not the case. False assumption. That's not the purpose of the gatekeeper. The gatekeeper basically is to coordinate, to recommend. And you'll find those words throughout the amendment and the bill. The single point of responsibility may be assigned to a community mental health center, designated hospital, state-funded crisis stabilization facility, or other entity. And here's the catch that I think is critical, that does not provide inpatient psychiatric treatment to patients under this act. There is a conflict of interest, the way we've been doing it in some areas of the state. And because of that conflict, filling beds on the state's dime is the result of a $25 million shortfall that we have here. So this is critical that they don't have this conflict of interest, that it's somebody unbiased that's not filling beds, doing the assessments and recommending in-treatment status for these patients. Item H, the county attorney shall notify the department and any gatekeeper of any detention, continued emergency detention order, directed outpatient commitment, or involuntary hospitalization order within 24 hours. In other words, we want this gatekeeper to be involved from beginning to end, and to make sure that every T is crossed, every I is dotted, and that the procedure is being followed. In other words, what's been happening, and I liken it to a monopoly board, instead of going around the board in some areas of the state because they have a nice facility, they're going from the hospital to a strong inpatient facility that's about $700 and some odd a day. And so we don't go around the monopoly board, we go right to boardwalk instantly. And I think some of these patients probably don't require that. And so in the bill, we talk about outpatient services and utilizing those a little bit more. Again, trying to get back that amount of money going towards the initial treatments and phases that we need to work through before inpatient treatment is considered. The last part on the amendment, and then we can stand for questions on the amendment, Mr. Chairman. The item J, the department boards of county commissioners designate hospitals, gatekeepers, and other treatment providers may, upon contract or agreement, coordinate and monitor the services and payments required for the treatment of persons with mental illness as provided under this section. Pursuant to contract or agreement, the department may issue any part of the expenses associated with the gatekeeper, which expenses would otherwise be the responsibility of the county under this act. So we leave that open even, Mr. Chairman, that the state could pick up some of that payment if necessary. You know, every case is different. As we discuss this bill briefly today, keep in mind that these are not criminals. These are patients that are in danger to themselves by definition or to others. And a lot of our counties don't have facilities to handle these types of patients. And so an initial assessment is done, recommendation is done, a hearing is held, and a lot of times our judges say hospitalization is required. In our particular area of the state, Mr. Chairman, when a judge issues that order, it leaves us only two options. and that is the center in Casper or the state hospital. And so there's what I'm referring to. Because of that order, we bypass all the other processes and we go right to the most expensive. Now, sometimes that's necessary. I would admit that. But a lot of times, a crisis stabilization facility, six-bed facility or a four-bed facility in some of our smaller counties with an 24-hour around-the-clock observation might suffice. And so that's what this amendment tries to do, Mr. Chairman, and I would stand for questions on the amendment.
Questions on the amendment? Any discussion on the amendments? Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Of course, having chaired the Title 25 Task Force, this is a good bill. As we went through the process, the bill itself, as it was approved by the task force and then sent on to the Labor Committee, did not have the gatekeeper in it, but we did discuss gatekeeper at length. And clearly, the gatekeeper concept is going to be critical to this us getting a handle on these costs. The way it works right now is it's a mishmash depending on where it is in the state, and our only role at the Department of Health is they have to write the check, and we need to get a handle on that. With regard, I have a question about the gatekeeper and how you envision, or how did the committee envision who was the gatekeeper at this point, or what you thought it would be. During the task force, we talked a lot about your community mental health centers more than likely being the gatekeeper. This particular amendment talks about providers. I'm wondering, could that be just an individual, or could you have multiple gatekeepers within the your community? So just a little more background on what you intend by the term provider.
Anybody else have a question? Anybody else? Senator Scott, you want to take a shot?
Mr. Chairman, as the committee envisioned it, the provider that would be the gatekeeper, and the statute envisions this as well, would most likely be the community mental health center. Now, there is some variation across the state as to the particular abilities, competences of the community mental health center might not be as available in some of the smaller counties. So we left some discretion here with the county commissioner as to who to select. They are, quite frankly, very likely to be a provider one way or another, particularly when you're talking about the possibility that a number of these people will be treated on an outpatient basis, and that's one of the objectives here. Mr. Chairman, we're putting people, a lot of people, in a much more restrictive hospital environment than need to be there, and we've talked mostly about the fiscal consequences, but there are serious consequences for the patient. You take them out of their job, you take them out of their family. You don't want to do that unless you have to. So that's the point of the gatekeeper, but almost all the gatekeepers are going to be providers of one way or another, and so you have some risk of a conflict of interest, but basically the gatekeeper's interests, if they're a provider of some kind of lesser outpatient services, something like that, probably align with both the interests of the patient and the interests of the state. So we figured that was an acceptable system, and you got to have somebody that's knowledgeable doing it. So basically, in answer to your question, mostly it'll be community mental health centers. We've had to educate one or two of them on that this is one of the things they've got to do if they want to get their state block grant, and quit talking to us about more money. Usually they'll be the ones, but this gives flexibility to the county commissioners, who are the ones that know the local circumstance.
Okay, we're still on the amendment. Any further discussion on the amendment? On the amendment. Question is on, trying to think who it was. It was Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report. No, I believe Senator Peterson made the motion on the amendment. Was that correct? Scott made the motion on the amendment. Senate Stand and Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 58, made by Chairman Scott. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is passed. Back on the bill. Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question about the underlying constitutional rationale under which somebody can be kept on outpatient treatment, and that might be something for our esteemed colleague from the Windy City, which would be Cheyenne, not Casper. And as I recall it, the Supreme Court has said that you can restrain somebody.
Senator Kinski, maybe you could get a little bit back.
As I recall it, the Supreme Court said you can restrain somebody involuntarily if they represent an immediate danger of grievous bodily harm to themselves or others. And in the olden days, that meant once they're stabilized and were no longer an immediate threat, you couldn't restrain them. If they wanted to get up and walk out, they got up and walked out. You couldn't do anything about it. Constitutionally, how do we then extend the outpatient treatment in lieu of involuntary hospitalization when the patient has passed the crisis portion and no longer is suicidal or no longer is threatening others with death because they got back on their meds?
Thank you, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman,
you've got the same problem, Senator Scott. You get a little in front of your microphone there. Just back up a step.
Mr. Chairman, the notion is medically, yeah, they may be fine as long as they stay in their meds, but a number of these people, there are two problems they can have. One, they're likely to need some additional treatment because their mental illness has given them other problems. You treat the mental illness, then you have to treat the other problems that came along with that so that they can function effectively. So that's one point. The second point is that you've got to keep them on their meds. And if they don't stay in their meds, they get off them, then they go right back right away to being a danger to themselves or others. And where clinically you think that's likely to happen with some of these people, you may need this period of extended outpatient treatment where there's some policing of are they taking their meds. You could do it by sticking them in the state hospital, sticking them in some other hospital, confining them more involuntarily. It'll get the job done.
Yeah.
But that's inconsistent with the modern philosophy of treating people in the least restrictive possible environment. And doing it on an outpatient basis is a good deal less restrictive than having to confine them. And that principle that you want to be in the least restrictive environment is consistent with the provisions of Article 1, Section 2 of the Constitution, which says people have an inherent right to liberty, amongst other things. So you have, I think, a good constitutional rationale for doing this way, because it does protect the individual, protects the rest of us in the least restrictive way, and it's much better than having to keep them in a hospital if you can do it.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the good tall senator from Natrona County is absolutely correct. And we looked at this, and we had various attorneys, whether from the prosecuting attorney's office or we had experts, attorneys that practice solely in defending individuals in these Title 25 commitments. So in essence, you're going to have a hearing regardless. And so then the court has to determine what is its option. It can hospitalize them. First, they have to determine if they're a danger to themselves or others. If the court so deems it, then the question is, what are the alternatives for the court? The alternative is we're providing it now will allow the court to order outpatient treatment. Now, there is some that doesn't come without some additional work, potentially, for the court. because the court's going to have to monitor how this person is doing without patient commitment. If the person is not complying with the order, the court then has the alternative of hospitalizing them at that point in time. The other component of this bill is that if they've been hospitalized and they're nearing the term of their completion, or we can render better care as they're becoming more stabilized, then we allow and make it clearer, although it seems that it was in the law in the first place, convalescent leave. So we're trying to get away from just automatically warehousing these individuals, still protecting their constitutional rights. They have every right to come back to the court and if they think that, appeal the decision of the court. But I think that you're going to have some of this regardless of what happens. Once the person gets completed either with their hospitalization or they get completed with their outpatient treatment, and they go on about their life and they're feeling really good about themselves, and then they say, I don't need my meds anymore. That's that cycle that we just keep seeing a lot of. Most of these are repeat kinds of things. We hope to break that, but it's a tough one. It's a tough one to fix. But the other thing that this bill does not do, and we are going to have to look at, folks in this state, is there is a dearth of crisis stabilization beds in this state. You can do so much more with crisis stabilization beds than you can by just simply putting them in a hospital. And particularly, and we just don't have that much. And we don't have a lot of beds regardless. And so the big place in Casper tends to get most of the people. We have our hospital here has about 16 beds. Gillette has some beds, but for the most part, they're not really very well existent in the state.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, I thank my esteemed colleague from Bates Creek, as well as the very accomplished attorney from the Windy City. My question, I grant that it's a good idea, and I like the idea. I'm just concerned about you can well envision somebody mounting a constitutional challenge in federal court because the Supreme Court decision, and it's years ago, so my knowledge is dated, said once they're no longer in immediate danger to themselves or others, you lose jurisdiction over the person. That's why in the 70s we were turning these people loose in the streets because they were crazy and odd and maybe off their meds, but they weren't actually at that point suicidal or threatening death to somebody else.
A lot of them made it into the legislature.
Mm-hmm. So I don't, has this been tested in other states, in other venues, to say, yes, it's constitutional, this continuing restraint on liberty, post-crisis stabilization? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Anybody want to answer that? Senator Ross.
Yes, it has been tested, Mr. Chairman, and we looked at throughout the task force a number of states have different systems than us, but yes, the outpatient component has been tested throughout the country, in Ohio and in Florida I know of, those are the ones that come off the top of my head just thinking back over the hearings. But once again, remember that the central key is that the court has to first make a determination that they're a danger to themselves or others, and then they have to decide what the option is. But at the end of the tunnel, it's still the same thing. If they've completed their outpatient treatment, then they're not a danger to themselves or others, they're off. Same thing in hospitalization situation. So I'm not sure that I see that there is a legal problem to it. I think the contest that you do see is generally on the front end as to whether or not they're actually a danger to themselves or others, and whether or not they're being involuntarily committed to an institution violating their rights. So,
are you ready for the question? Senator Scott?
I would just add to that, as I see it, the law has evolved, particularly with the Olmstead decision, Supreme Court decision, that pushes you to treat in the least restrictive environment that's consistent with safety of both the patient and the public, and that's exactly what this bill is doing.
Are you ready for Senator Peterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief just in closing. Most of that can be found on page 21 of the bill where it talks about the release on convalescent leave to include a plan. And what we found out during the task force was a lot of times when we take advantage of this convalescent leave from our state mental hospital, notifications and reports aren't passed on to the locals, whether it be the treatment centers or even the county attorneys, that that person has been released back into the community. A bus ticket is provided, and they're on their way. And so we saw that as a problem concern, so we tried to lay that out in 21 to make sure that there was a plan of treatment following this outpatient hospital treatment, and then the court reviewing period to end of 1 year on convalescent leave to review it. Thereafter, the hospital should reexamine the factory into the hospitalization of the patient on convalescent leave, make a report to the discharge to the court and county attorney who initiated procedures for involuntary hospitalization. So, again, the overall umbrella, and the good senator from Sheridan is correct, we always have to be careful of those constitutional rights. These are not criminals, these are patients. And those rights have to be adhered to and not broken. So, but the overlying umbrella that governs this whole thing is what is best for the patient. But within the process, the affordability, the practicality of the treatments, all those things need to be considered. That's where the gatekeeper comes in to assist, to try and coordinate activities and treatments. Again, not overriding the provider, the expert, the doctor, the physical medical doctor, or the mental health professional, not overriding the county attorney, not overriding the judge, of course, but to be consulted with, to be involved. And so we tried to lay this out. Again, walking that fine line, as the good senator reminded us of the constitutional rights of these individuals, and this is the bill. This is the best that we could do in a year's work of task force, and I'd ask for the body's favor consideration, and let's get this thing going. And I think the overall philosophy is get them on the front end, less expensive, $60-$65 a day compared to $750, $800 a day on the expensive end. And that's where we've gotten into trouble with this $25 million short run.
Are you ready for the question? The question is on Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 58. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 58 is passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, the next file is Senate File 91. Should we lay it aside for a minute or two? Go ahead. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 91. Reading clerk will please read the file.
Senate File 91, State Penal Facilities Review, an act relating to state institution, sponsored by Senator Nicholas, was referred to Committee Number 12, Rules, which returned a committee recommendation of due pass. Ayes, Senators Bebout, Kraft, Nicholas, Perkins, and Rothfuss. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Senator Bebout?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report it is a favorable recommendation, due pass on the Senate File 91. And, Mr. Chairman, this, of course, is the President's bill, and we had some great discussion about the situation that exists at the prison and the potential areas, and I think in the present budget that we have now, we're talking about there's $7 million to look at some repairs to the electrical switchgear center, and then there's some other things to help it out temporarily. But ultimately, we need to talk about the entire process of what we're doing there, and the President just showed up, so I'll turn it over to him, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Bebout. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, when we begin to look at the issues with the state penitentiary, we realize that there are multiple pieces and parts of this prison. You have the secured block that may not have damage be taking place. We have greater damage to the lower security elements. But bottom line is, when you start to see the dollar amounts that we're looking at, anywhere from say $10 million up to $90 million on early estimates, you have to begin to exercise or go through the exercise of what's the best overall solution for the long term. And sooner or later, we're going to be called upon to make decisions. And it seems to me that if we have any lessons learned from the Capitol or from other large projects, is that we need to have a committee of folks appointed from this group of folks along with the House who have agreed that they will get their roll up their sleeves, get into the problem, and make sure that we're headed the right direction with the resources to get there. And I don't think that you would necessarily have confidence if A and I made a recommendation based upon a reputable engineering architectural firm and came back and said, well, here's the solution and here's the amount you need to write your check for. And I think that you would want to know that somebody among us has really gotten in to say, wait a minute, have we looked at replacement? Have we looked at replacing part of it? What are we going to do with swing space? What are we going to do if we have to rebuild all of it, a piece of it, or portion of it? Should it be rebuilt where? In Rollins, Casper, Torrington, you name it. What are the total solutions to this? And make sure that we're on top of it. And the only way I know to do that, ladies and gentlemen, is to begin the process of putting together a select committee. And you could see the folks that we've got are 5 and 5 on page 2. We talked about whether it ought to be a smaller group or a larger group. But I think when you go and look at this group and the solutions, you're going to have to not only look at people with expertise. So I think leadership, you ought to be looking at people that have the time, some level of expertise and willingness to get into the problem down to the nubs. But there's also going to have to be a geographical component. You know that there's you're certainly going to want a representative from Carbon County. It affects their constituents. But you may also want somebody in there from Natrona County because they might be saying, hey, you can lower costs by bringing it here. But so we need a cross-section of folks within this 10 to make sure that we're kind of fairly represented, and we want to critically examine the problem, the solution, and the long-term workout of this issue. I think you look at everything. Maybe we go out and hire a private prison company to do the construction, lease it back to us, or we do a private construction lease back. We look at building it ourselves. We look at repairing. You look at all the options. But in the end of the day, we have a group of our folks who come back and says, this is the recommendation. Or, if you like the current situation, you essentially let it go the direction it is. And, you know, I've been on the Capitol Building Commission committee. They meet quarterly, and they probably meet 3 hours. If that's what you're comfortable making decision, I don't think it is. So I recommend that this is a pathway forward to getting the information and learning, getting a level of confidence in the solution so that we know it's there. I think there are other changes we need to make to the current $7 million appropriation. We need to look at that, when the trigger is. We need to look at whether or not we need extra consultants, and maybe it's better off to hire somebody that would lead us and facilitate us through this decision-making process who has no interest in the outcome. They're not the A&E firm that's going to do the design one way or the other. Rather, they're the independent firm to say, here's how you make these decisions and how you make sure you're getting good decisions. That may be a component of it. So we need to give some resources. We'll talk about that in a different bill. This bill simply sets up the select committee. Stand for questions.
Any questions? Anybody have any discussion?
Just a moment.
Ms. Sec, we've got some coming. Hold on. I don't think it can be referred out of committee of the whole. You've got to get out of committee of the whole to re-refer it.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I gave you the discussion. Remember it, so I don't have to tell you again. Everybody remember what we talked about, so you don't have to hear it again.
You're on.
Madam Chairman, you think we can? We're going to look that up for a second, Mr. Senator Nicholas.
Well,
you wanted it right now, we could do. We could go out. We'll go out, take the committee out,
yeah,
bring
just,
back in, and
just,
do it.
Yeah.
We can. We can. It can be a motion to re-refer or recommit, but I think we actually, when we adopt the Committee of the Whole report, is when we'd have to do it. So it might be best to just get out of Committee of the Whole and do that.
Mr. Chairman.
Sorry. I'm sorry, Senator Bebout, I didn't have you listed. There you go.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again in 5 minutes.
You've heard the motion. What is your pleasure? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Do we have a motion for re-refer? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, Senate File 91 contains an appropriation, and I ask that it be re-referred to the Senate Appropriations Committee.
Without objection, Senate File 91 is re-referred to Committee to Appropriations. The Senate will stand at ease for 5 minutes. Aster. The Senate will please come back to order. Mr. Majority Leader, why the Senate's coming back to order. The JAC did hold a hearing on that item. They'll have to create a standing committee report, so we'll lay the bill back once the we get back in the committee of the whole. So as soon as the committee of the whole chair goes, we can go back in and just keep moving. Mr. Do we need to? Well, we need to read in the standing committee report, though, don't we? So I need to stick around until that happens. Well, it's not as easy as I thought. Mr. Chairman, I think we ought to just move forward. The standing committee reports will be prepared, and we'll have to come back out one more time and just immediately go back into committee of the whole. So we're at that order of business of bills on general file. Senator Bebout.
Mr. President, I move the Senate resolve itself back in committee of the whole to discuss bills on general file.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That motion is adopted. Senator Case. So they'll lay that bill back and then...
Okay, thanks. Committee of the Whole will come back to order. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 89. Would the reading clerk please read the file?
Senate File 89, Workers' Compensation, Time for Requesting Hearing, an Act Relating to Labor and Employment, sponsored by Senator Perkins. Was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, Kinski, and Von Flatern, Senator Christensen, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Senator Von Flatern?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 89, Workers' Compensation. And I ask you to give the floor to Senator Perkins to explain.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, with respect to Senate File 89, this is a good little bill. What we're doing here, the problem that we found is that when the Workers' Compensation Division makes a determination, you have 15 days from the date of the determination to either to file an objection or request a hearing. That applies to both employees and employers. The current statute does not deal with just regular first-class mail. The division has promulgated a rule that says that while the 15 days run begins on the date, it's clear that it begins on the date that it's mailed or the date of the determination. But the rule says that it is deemed filed upon the date that it's stamped received by the division. What that happens is if you lose, and I talking, you know, in talking... with a member of the body who expressed concern about that he knew was aware of a case where it took 7 days for that mail to get there. If they did anything other than drop it in Federal Express or certify it or return receipt mail, it would not. There's no way that it would be timely filed by U.S. mail going back. Looking at that, and also I would also say, Mr. Chairman, in the interest of full disclosure, I have this very issue on a petition for review for a client in the. In the seventh judicial district court right now. However, this is obviously very broad an application, and since it's not going to be retroactive by effect, I don't believe that it creates a conflict. But I do want to have that in interest of full disclosure out there.
Thank you, Senator.
But anyway, what that does is makes me very familiar with the rules and the inner workings of this. So ultimately, what this bill does is. It turns out that there is already in statute, which you see at the bottom of the new language, 16-4-103A, deals with this very issue on any report, documentation, or any report or other documents filed with the state or any political subdivision. If it's filed in the U.S. mail, it's deemed filed on the date of the postmark, of the postmark of the cancellation mark on the postage. And then it also has in there what happens if either the postmark's missing or if it's lost or destroyed, or if the postmark's been obliterated or it's in error, then there's a method by which you can prove or by competent evidence that you did mail it or post it within the required deadline, and then it would be deemed filed. What this does makes it clear to the division that this statute would apply
to matters filed with the Workers' Compensation Division, at least particularly with this section, and so that what would happen, Mr. Chairman, is that you would then be deemed filed on the date that you post it in the U.S. mail in accordance with the cancellation mark. It would be deemed filed there, and what that would do is then, Mr. Chairman, it really is just simply what sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. The division has the benefit of the postmark date to start the clock running. The respondent, which is an employer or employee, would have the benefit of the postmark date when they file it by posting it in the U.S. mail. I think I can also share that from the testimony, I was present during the testimony in the division. The division was there and remarked that they thought this was a good bill. If I've misstated, I would ask a member of the committee to correct me.
Question.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Any discussion on Senate File 89? Hearing none. The question is on Senator Von Flatern's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 89. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 89 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 39.
Senate File 39, Cease and Transfer Priority List, an act relating to prioritization of municipal solid waste facilities cease and transfer projects, sponsored by the Minerals Committee. It was referred to Committee No. 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman. First referral was to Committee No. 9, Minerals, which reports back a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Anderson, Coe, Cooper, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern. Senator Von Flatern, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Senator Von Flatern?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 39, and I believe I'm here to explain it.
Would you like the standing committee amendment read in? We want to wait.
Let's wait on that for one second.
Go ahead.
Let me talk about the bill. The bill is something that the Department of Environmental Quality has to fill out every year to get us up to speed on what they're going to do in the next year and what the priority list is for cease and transfer, which is to cease dumping their trash, basically, and to transfer it to another facility. So the first part of the bill talks about under A on page 2 is the maximum amount, and the C, what C means is a closure project. SWDD means solid waste disposal district, and a T means transfer projects. And then on page 3, they just start the list, and this is the list of priorities on where they'll which projects are at top of the list and will be funded next. There is an amendment to this section. I'd like that read in at this time.
Okay. Be Senate Standing Committee Amendment Number 1.
Senate File 39, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 3, line 15.
Senator Von Flatern.
So you also have a hint. I move Standing Committee Number 1 to Senate File 39. And you also have a handout that looks like this one right here, which has a Senate File 39, Cease and Transfer Priority List. That tells you why each one of those values was changed. Page 3, line 15, we delete the 920,000. We insert the 1.437, and down you go as you can read yourself. The bottom line is we saved about $4 million by new engineering, by the department going into something that's as much as 10 years old on their estimates of what it will take. We're finally getting around to moving them up the list. The department goes in and does an estimate with their consultants. And the big one was on page 4, line 5. Let's see. I think it's actually on page 5, line 9, Claremont Town of. That was a typo. The original had 4.692 in it. The original amount was $4,692,800. It was just a duplicate of the one above it, and that's not what they meant. So you delete that, and you insert the, I think it is $300,000, page 4, line 9. Let me get that.
Page 5, line 9.
My mistake. Thank you. So you insert $300,000 with that $4,009,000. So that adds up to the same amount of money even with the typo in there. And if you look at the fiscal note, it's the same amount of money identified for loans and grants for cease and transfer. It's just that they had some typos on there where they copied that number down there. But the fiscal note total is per this amendment, where everybody's been reevaluated and new amounts have been put in. And this act is effective immediately and then upon completion, of course. But in reality, you can see the priority list. If anybody has any questions about their town and their particular priority or where they are, a lot of this is where they're shovel-ready, and they can begin to spend their money. Is a lot of how people moved up the list, or the town has applied or has not applied. That's another big part of where they get on the priority list. So I stand for questions, Mr. Chairman.
Discussion about the amendment? Any further discussion? Senator Burns, were you standing? No, okay. Not to speak, I don't think. So the question is on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, the Senate File 39. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is carried. Back on the bill. Anything? Any discussion on the file? Seeing none. The question is on Senator Von Flatern's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 39. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 39 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 4.
Senate File 4, Military Service Member Protections, an act relating to the military department, sponsored by the Transportation Committee, was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, which returned a committee recommendation of due pass. Ayes, Senators Boner, Emmerich, Escobel, Johnson, and Meyer. Senator Meyer, Chairman.
I've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Senator Meyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise that it do so with a due pass motion on Senate File 4, Military Service Member Protections, and I'll explain the bill, Mr. Chairman. Members, this is a service member protection bill. A little background, federal law has strong reemployment protections for Wyoming citizens called the federal duty. Wyoming has a similar reemployment protections for Wyoming residents called the state military duty with a Wyoming-based Guard or Reserve unit. The gap exists protecting Wyoming residents called the state military duty as a member of another state guard or reserve unit. Mr. Chairman, 20 states have fixed this gap, including Montana, Utah, and Idaho. 7 states are pending, including Nebraska. Mr. Chairman, what this bill allows is that for Wyoming residents who serve in another state, that serve in a guard unit in another state, the protections for their employer not to discriminate against them or fire them if they serve in another guard unit in another state. And so it's just a protection to do our part, basically to make sure that our guard is ready, and the guard of our surrounding states where our residents reside, they can participate in those units. A little closer to my home, we had a member that was in the Nebraska Guard, and he was able to go up clear to the rank of just underneath the adjutant general. And so it's a long tradition that states that may not have a unit that Wyoming has, that they'll go to another state if they want to fly F-16 jets or do something like that that we don't have. A lot of Colorado folks that come up here to fly our C-130s. We're trying to get this protection across all states so we can have a strong reserve and guard presence, not only in our state, but to basically protect our country against any threat that it might get into where people have to be deployed. And so, Mr. Chairman, I think this is a direction that I think all states will eventually get to. It will make our fighting forces stronger for our country and provide the protection for our citizens who wish to do their part.
Thank you, Senator Mark. Discussion on the bill. Any discussion? Seeing none. The question is on Senator Meyer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 4. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 4 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 12.
Senate File 12, Vietnam War Commemoration 2, an act relating to veterans. Sponsored by the Transportation Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, which returned a committee recommendation of due pass. Ayes, Senators Boner, Emmerich, Escobel, Johnson, and Meyer, Senator Meyer Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation of due pass amended. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Ross, Wasserberger, and Perkins, Senator Ross Chairman.
For the reading of the file, what is your pleasure, Senator Meyer?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee of the whole rise report that it do so with a due pass motion on Senate File 12, Vietnam War Commemoration. Mr. Chairman, Wyoming is a commemorative partner of the U.S. Department of Defense. In 2015 was the anniversary, the 50th anniversary of the start of the Vietnam War, when we actually ramped up and sent in our regular troops more than advisors. The commemorative activities are focused on a period from 2015 to 17. The VA estimates that there's about 17,000 vets in Wyoming, Mr. Chairman. And what we're trying to do is to honor and remember our vets in a commemorative book. And if you look on your desk, you guys will probably find a handout like this. And you can kind of go through there and see the facts that I'm talking about. If we're going to print the whole thing there, which is a full-color 160-page large format coffee table book, it costs us about $170,000. JAC, I think we came to JAC with a recommendation from veterans that we actually look at reducing that. But particularly in this, the 10 pages of this book is going to be specifically about Wyoming vets. So every state gets to have their own dedication to their own vets in that era. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, I would defer to the good chairman of appropriations to move their amendment. And we're in full support of this haircut and a longstanding tradition of two bills. I keep sending them bills taking haircut, Mr. Chairman.
Let's have the Standing Committee Amendment read in.
Senate File 12, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 4, line 4.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1?
Number 1.
Number 1 to
Senate File 12.
And yield the floor back as it was the recommendation of the good chairman who's sponsoring this bill.
Back to you, Senator Meyer. You can bring it home.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the reason for this cut is that in discussing with the folks that know more about vets than I'll probably ever will, that they looked at the number of folks out there that would probably enjoy having this commemorative book. Some folks don't want to necessarily even think about the war again. Some folks have some problems being reminded, but there's a number of different reasons why the Veterans Commission felt that they could do this with some less money, not the least of which is that they know the situation we are in the budget, and they're trying to do their part. So basically they cut this in half, or more than half. They went down to 40,000, and so they're going to print enough books with that, I think, to get a good distribution. It'll go out to the different libraries and things like that so different people can look at it, understand the history of the conflict, understand the 10 pages from Wyoming. That's the perspective that we have in Wyoming from our veterans. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd ask for the body's favorable vote on the amendment. And if there are no questions on the amendment, I'd call for the question on the amendment.
Discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, the question is on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, the Senate File 12. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Amendment is carried. Back on the bill. Anything else on the bill?
Nothing else on the bill, Mr. Chairman. I ask for a favorable consideration.
Any further discussion? You've heard the bill. All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 12, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 12 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 73.
Senate File 73, Welfare Fraud Prevention, an act relating to welfare, sponsored by Senator Christensen. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, who returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Boner, Kraft, Driscoll, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with a recommendation of Senate File 73 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment. I ask it be read in at this time.
Senate File 73, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1197, line 7.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, a standing committee amendment is very simple. The bill has a requirement for report to the Joint Labor Committee. We have found experience over time that these reports will tend to go on and on and on forever with nobody ever reading them, that they're mostly looked at in the first few years after the bill is passed, where people want to see, well, did what I do have an effect? And then there's a lot of time and effort preparing them, and nobody reads them. And I believe it was last year, Mr. Chairman, Labor Committee recommended and the legislature agreed that we abolish most of the reports in the Health Department. So what this bill does is, in the spirit of that, name three specific years the next year and then just before the next two general sessions receive the report, so it will automatically go away after that. That's all the amendment does, or its adoption.
Senator Scott, there's a little confusion up here. We don't think you moved the Standing Committee Amendment.
Oh, I thought I did. I do move the Standing Committee Amendment.
Thank you. Discussion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor of the Standing Committee Amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Standing Committee Amendment carried. Back on the bill. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I yield to Senator Christensen for an explanation of this good little Senate file.
Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. We have a couple of other amendments, but let me work through the file, and then I'll come back to them.
Okay.
The Senate File 73 is a file referring to an enhanced eligibility and identity verification process. It provides for referral of cases to other agencies, requires a report, has some definitions, and an effective date. The idea behind this bill, after working with Department of Family Services, is we need to maybe tighten up the conversation a little bit. They have some practices on how they deal with and verify, but this goes a little farther than that, and it gives options on how to verify and make sure that the people who are filing for the benefit are actually deserve it or worthy of qualify for the benefit. And when you jump into here, if you want to know a little bit of what that looks like in identity information, over on page 2, there's a definition for identity information that they're going to verify: name, alias, date of birth, address, and so forth, Social Security number. And then the process starts there, halfway through page 2, down at line 13. And it says, prior to awarding the benefit, they'll go through an authentication process that confirms they are who they say they are. And it'll consist of financial or personal questions related to the applicant, and goes on, and then over on page 3, that talks about the process and what this process means, and then it defines it. But I want you to note that up on line 5, there's some key words there. It says, the department shall, to the extent practicable, determine the following information as it relates to each applicant for or the recipient of the public welfare benefit. And so it gives us quite a few different tools to use, without locking the department into using every one of these tools to the extent practicable. And it talks about, there's options here about earned and unearned income, employment, unemployment, Social Security, immigration status. any prisoner or public housing issues, if they've got a criminal history, if they're fleeing felon or a parole violator, wage reporting information from states contiguous to Wyoming, and so forth, earned pensions, different things in here to validate that the people are who they say they are and that they actually have the benefit coming. And there's three pages of that. When we get over onto page six, it says there is a new area here, and it says the department on line 10 is authorized to enter into agreements with third-party vendors to obtain the following information prior to awarding any public benefit. And so this gives the department an option also on what they can go after. And that information that they can enter into agreements with, in paragraph I, information from other states or databases, national public record search over on page 7, using basically the internet to validate public records, best available addresses and license, driver's license information to verify that they actually are residents of the state of Wyoming, kind of public record search. And then down at the bottom of page 7 in paragraph C, starting on 18, it also says they can also consider information from other sources. So it's a fairly wide open, gives them a lot of different tools to work with. On the case review, this gets to be part of when they go in and find out who the folks are. If they find a problem or a discrepancy, this then spells out how they can deal with that. If it's a discrepancy that's just accidental and doesn't really change their status, they can ignore it. If it does affect their eligibility, it gives a process on how to go forward. And also it has some respect for the individual about notice and timelines to respond. And so it spells out the individual's rights and their role in the process also. They've got 10 days to respond if there's a question about their application and they've received notice. And then what the department has to do, their responsibility once a decision is made. Over on page 10, in those extreme cases, we talk about referral of cases for investigation where there might be a fraud, misrepresentation, identity theft, or another violation of the law, and how those can be dealt with and referred to prosecuting authorities. You heard the good chairman brought in an amendment on the reporting part of it in page 11. It was adopted. Have another amendment, and when the director of Department of Health came forward to visit with this, talked with the director of Department of Family Services and the director of Department of Health. And the Department of Health director was a little concerned. He said the way this is written, while the intent and the original focus was on Department of Family Services for welfare fraud, the definition as it stands today or the bill actually could cover all of the clients of the Department of Health, a much broader, up to around 100,000 people. 65,000 of those are Medicaid patients. And he said they already have their own investigative division to deal with that clientele. And so he had a request that while we're starting this up, rather than try to cover every division, keep it on the original focus. And that's where we could tie in this Committee of the Whole Amendment number one. Move that or have it read in, please.
Would the reading clerk read the Committee of the Whole Amendment number one?
Senate File 73, Committee of the Whole Amendment number one, page 1, line 3.
Senator Christensen.
All right, there's some cleanup language.
Move the amendment.
I could move that. I'd move that amendment, sir.
Committee of the Whole Amendment number one.
Committee of the Whole Amendment number one, so moved.
Back at you.
There's a little cleanup language on there. Just trying to talk a little fast. A little cleanup language as we go through, but the meat of this, down on line 17 of this amendment, is that new language that says nothing in this act is construed to create any new obligation for the state of Wyoming Department of Health. And that's the catch-all, clean them out of it, so their focus remains on DFS with the original intent of welfare fraud prevention. There is another amendment, but we'll hold that one until we see how this one fares. And with that, turn it back to you.
Thank you, Senator Christensen. Discussion on the amendment, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, on and against the amendment. Mr. Chairman, the key issue here is Department of Health. They came to our committee. Department of Family Services testimony was in line with the fiscal note that this was codifying what they're already doing. Now, well-run, competent Department of Family Services done an excellent job in this whole welfare area, and we were very complimentary in committee. Department of Health came and said, gee, CMS won't let us do some of these things. They did say they already had a memorandum of understanding with Department of Family Services for the things they could do, and we didn't follow the normal process because of the time with this budget session where when a bureaucracy says we can't do it because the feds and ask them to show us the law, because a lot of the times it ain't so. The bureaucracies have gotten together and arranged the world to suit themselves and use each other to prevent policy side on either side from interfering with them. So I don't know whether there is a federal requirement or not, but they alleged that there was. If so, it's one of the many reasons that the Medicaid program is a very poorly designed program, that they don't allow this kind of verification. They do allow some of it, apparently, and we thought to the extent practicable language that was already there in the bill took care of this, and I would hope we would defeat the amendment and let the health department worry about it a bit, because they need to do a better job. They've taken over bureaucratically the authority in spite of us down here sometimes on all the eligibility stuff in this big welfare program. They ought to take the responsibilities of verification that go with it. So I would urge us to defeat the amendment. I think the original bill is just fine in this respect. And let's try to hold their feet to the fire a little bit. So I'd urge us to defeat the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion on the amendment? Question. Further discussion on the amendment? Hearing none. Question is on Senator Christensen's motion for committee of the whole amendment number 1 to Senate File 73. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no.
No.
I believe the amendment has been defeated. Back on the bill, Senator Christensen.
If we could read in committee of the whole amendment number 2, please.
Senate File 73, committee of the whole amendment number 2, page 12, line 11.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move committee of the whole amendment number 2 and ask that when the body votes, they vote aye. This one is, this came as a catch from LSO. And over on page 12, it was just a correction on statutes. Page 12, line 11. And the bill, as you have it in front of you, says 429108. He said we had the wrong statute in there, and it needs to be 429107. With that, I'd call for the
question. Any questions on the amendment? Any discussion? Hearing none. Questions on the committee of the whole amendment number 2 to Senate File 73. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is carried. Back on the bill. Senator Christensen?
Mr. Chairman, some of the other states that have taken this on have found that they've had a lot more fraud going on and were able to tighten things up. In the Department of Health, they've already had some success with that in previous endeavors, and I think there's opportunities here. We are always looking for ways to not just cut our spending, but make sure the money is going where it belongs. And this is what this bill is about, and I'd ask for your favorable vote.
Any further discussion on the file? Any further discussion? The question is on Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 73. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
Can you be against fraud?
Ask Tony.
Okay. Senator Coe, hello.
The Senate beg leave to rise and sit again. The Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
Sorry about the mess.
Just leave it all right there.
Senate will come to order. Reports from standing committees.
February 18, 2016, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 91, State Penal Facilities Review, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with the recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman.
Senator Coe.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, move the Senate resolve itself back into Committee of the Whole.
You heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no. Senator Case.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, would it be the intention to take up 91 now? Or would we wait?
Take it up.
Okay. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 91.
Senate File 91, State Penal Facilities Review, an act relating to the state institutions, sponsored by Senator Nicholas. It was referred to Committee Number 12, Rules, which returned a committee recommendation of due pass. Ayes, Senators Bebout, Kraft, Nicholas, Perkins, and Rothfuss. Senator Nicholas, Chairman. Was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger. Senator Ross, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Senator Ross?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I assume that I should move it again.
I think so.
I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises the report, it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 91. And you've been encouraged by the President to remember his comments previous Committee of the Whole. I would tell you, though, that the Appropriations Committee did meet to consider the appropriation that's on this bill. It's for $70,000. This bill is effective immediately so that we can get right on to this project and start getting a grasp on what we're going to do with this prison. I'd urge your favorable consideration of this good Senate file.
Discussion on Senate File 91. Discussion. So seeing no discussion, the question is on Senator Ross's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 91. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 91 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 74.
Senate File 74, State Miners Hospital Board Employees, an act relating to mines and minerals, sponsored by Senator Hastert. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, which returned a committee recommendation of due pass. I, Senators Anderson, Coe, Cooper, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation of due pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Senator Von Flatern?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 74, State Miners Hospital, and I'll yield the floor to Senator Hastert to explain.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate. Senate File 74 is the Miners Hospital Board employees. And all we're doing here, first thing I want to make sure I didn't mention when I did the introductory vote was that the money that's in the bill comes out of their own funds. So the $45,000 is coming out of the Miners Hospital Fund. And what we're doing is allowing for two full-time positions, or additional two full-time positions. Right now, the miners, and I shouldn't say additional, it's just authorized as three. They're allowed two full-time positions now, and it's the executive director and an assistant. And what they do is the director puts a part-time person in Campbell County and a part-time person in Sweetwater County. And because of the increased workload of the Miners Hospital, and because of the new IRS regulations on health savings accounts, makes the individuals with health savings account are not eligible or no longer eligible for Miners Hospital funds, unfortunately. And so the amount of work and the workload has been rising dramatically. So the executive director was looking to be able to put a full-time person in Gillette and a full-time person in Sweetwater County. And the reasons of those two locations, that's the largest numbers of minors in the state. So that's all we're doing. And what she is looking for is just the authorization to be able to phase those in. It's not something that she's going to start immediately, but it's going to be, the workload is compiling so much that it's very much needed. That's all the bill does, Mr. Chairman, and I'll stand for questions.
Okay. Questions on Senate File 74? Questions? Any questions? Seeing none. There's no amendment, so the question is on Senator Von Flayturn's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a do-pass recommendation on Senate File 74. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 74 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 53.
Senate File 53, Large Project Funding, an act relating to the Wyoming Wildlife and Natural Resource Funding Act, sponsored by the Natural Resource Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Barnard, Christensen, Dockstader, Emmerich, and Geis. Senator Geis, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger. Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. Who from the Ag Committee is going to move this bill? What is your pleasure, Senator Emmerich?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report that it do pass on
53
large projects.
Thank you, Senator.
And for that, and for the explanation, this good large bill. I'll refer to Senator Hicks.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I'll try to get through this fairly quickly. So just to remind the body where this thing has been so far. So the process is that somebody makes application to the trust fund. At least two members of the board go out and visit every single one of these projects. They then come back and make a recommendation to the board in its entirety. They review the projects. They either make it or they don't move on. These are four projects that moved on. At that time of process, then it comes before your select federal natural resource funding committee. From there, as you heard, it's been to the Ag Committee, which was then reverted to the Appropriations Committee. So it's had a long journey to get here, folks, with that. And I think a lot of eyes have looked at this, but I want to go through this. What this bill does is appropriate $1,519,635 from the Wildlife and Natural Resource Income Account for four projects. I want to go through those four projects with you real quick. The first project is a Lazy BV conservation easement in Park County. That total project cost is $1,666,000 and some change. The total grant out of this for this large project bill from the Wildlife Natural Resource Trust Fund is $269,635 of the total project. Next project is the Lower Encampment River in Carbon County. Total project cost for this project is a little over $2 million. There's $600,000 allocated out of the Wildlife and Natural Resource Trust for this. Next project is in Fremont County. It's the South Pass Aspen 2 project. That total project cost is $1.1 million, $445,000 out of the Wildlife Natural Resource Trust grant. Fourth project is Rocking Chair Conservation Easement in Lincoln County. That project includes total project cost of $1.65 million, $400,000 out of the Wildlife Natural Resource Trust account. Well, let me tell you what these projects will do. Now, they'll protect and provide habitat and habitat enhancement for antelope, sage grouse. We all know how important sage grouse and maintaining those populations and habitat is to the state of Wyoming in lieu of the recent decision. Elk, mule deer, trout, bighorn sheep, and moose. It also maintains agricultural baselands, agricultural productivity, improves irrigation efficiency, reduces the risk of catastrophic wildfire. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd stand for any questions. No question, I'd ask for your favorable consideration of a yes vote.
Questions on Senate File 53? Any questions? Any questions? Seeing none. The question is on Senator Emmerich's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 53. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 53 is passed Committee of the Whole. I do have one little housekeeping thing before we go. We know it's very warm in here. The building managers are trying to cool it down. But it's just because it's such a big, warm day outside, so we just kind of have to buck it up a little bit. And they'll have the fans on. It'll cool off. No way. Will you leave them coats on? Senator Driscoll, how are you doing?
Mr. Chairman, privilege of the floor.
Absolutely.
Fellow senators, please join me in doing a great welcome to Zeta, Faith, and Grace Anderson, my neighbors, Devil's Tower, and Steve Mueller. They're here from Wyoming Virtual School, here for Capitol Day, and Grace is one of the top two youth volunteers in Wyoming in 2016 from Prudential Spirit of Community Awards. Please join me in welcoming them.
Hear, hear. Thanks for coming to the Senate. You're very well represented. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 88.
Senate File 88, State Lands Within Grand Teton National Park, an act relating to state land. Sponsored by Senator Bebout, it was referred to Committee Number 12, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Bebout, Kraft, Nicholas, Perkins, and Rothfuss. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Senator Bebout?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with a favorable recommendation do pass on Senate File 88. There is a standing committee amendment. I ask it to be read in at this time.
Senate File 88, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 21.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Senate, this bill deals with lands, state lands, inside the Grand Teton National Park. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to go through this very quickly. Originally, there were four parcels of ground, a mineral estate only, 86-acre parcel, and then two 640-acre school sections. We entered an agreement about 3 or 4 years ago, and it took a considerable amount of time for the federal government to get around to trying to at least honor part of their agreement, which they did. They did buy the Snake River parcel for $16 million and spent $2,000 for the mineral estate and the Jackson Lake parcel. Mr. Chairman, there's been a renewed interest by the Grand Teton National Park and others up in that part of our state to try to continue and proceed with this purchase. What I bring to you, and Mr. Chairman, I'm going to talk about the original bill, then I'll explain the changes the amendment makes to that original bill. If you look at the bill, and on page 2, it talks about the two particular school sections, one being Antelope Flats, two being the Cali Parcel, both 640 acres. And we will accept no less than the appraised value of the high appraisal. There were two appraisals. We took the high appraisals from both appraisals, $46 million per school section or $92 million total. The authority to sell these parcels was originally set up to be December 31st of 2016. In order to extend that to December 31st of 2018, this was my idea that I wanted a $10 million non-refundable deposit for the cost of extension of that particular date. And we go on to Section 2, and we wanted to put in some provisions to allow the State Land Board some options to do different things. One of those that they may seek an exchange of property from the BLM within our state, and we're looking primarily at the mineral and surface estate. You know, it seems like it made a lot of sense to us that we could find a good mineral income-producing property that we could exchange for it. It might be better in the long run. We go on to onto page 6, we talk about that we will give preference to those particular type of properties, which include both the surface and the mineral estate. Mr. Chairman, if you go to page 7, line F, we have, in evaluating these land exchanges, we shall have a land exchange advisory panel. This was in the original bill, and we're just continuing that, composed of two persons, one appointed by the governor, one appointed by, joined by the president of the Senate and the speaker of the House. Mr. Chairman, we go on to Section 3, and we add another provision in there. Actually, it's a pretty good idea.
that in lieu of cash, if it made sense to the to SLID, that we would in fact receive a payment or a cash flow, what we might be able to charge for people entering the park, or some kind of a revenue sharing agreement with the with Grand Teton National Park that would be ongoing forever. And that's what the original bill does, Mr. Chairman. I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1.
It's been read in, so go ahead.
And, Mr. Chairman, I would ask the body favorable consideration. After a lot of discussion about this particular bill, and we talked to the people up there, it looked like that the $10 million non-refundable deposit was a deal breaker, and I still wanted to try to maintain that. And what we did, and it's actually a good idea, it turns out when we were looking at the leases and the easements on the Kelly parcel, there was an easement in there that when they did the appraisal, it was determined that it was worth $7 million. They did the first appraisal. They didn't see it. They did the second. There was a $7 million difference. So if you look at the amendment on page 3, line 20, we say that the board shall sell both parcels in a single transaction unless board determines that the titles to both parcels are free and of any and all encumbrances and easements. So, Mr. Chairman, what we do is the Grand Teton National Park will have to release that easement the state granted them, oh, I think, about 50, 60 years ago. And Mr. Chairman, the value of that through the appraisal process was determined to be $7 million. So by getting them to eliminate that easement, we pick up $7 million of value. If you go on further on down at the amendment, page 4, line 2, we delete the $10 million and we put in $500,000. Non-refundable deposit, they're willing to do that. And then the last thing we do, Mr. Chairman, is on page 7 after line 20, we insert the limitations regarding the sale of parcels in Section 1 shall apply only to an exchange under Section 2. So what we're saying in Section 2 applies to Section 1. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to answer any questions on the Standing Committee. If there are none, I'd ask call for the question on it.
Questions on the Standing Committee Amendment? Any discussion? Any discussion? Seeing none, the motion is on Senate Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 88. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is carried. Back to you, Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I've explained the bill, the Standing Committee Amendment. If there are no more questions, I call for question on the Senate file.
Senator Bebout, there's a Committee of the Whole amendment. Let's take that up now.
Okay.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move committee or
let's have it read in, Senator Hicks.
Yep.
Senate File 88, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 5.
Back to you, Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 77, members of the
board. Whoa. I think it's 88.
Senate File 88.
Okay. Say the motion again.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 88.
I might have misheard you, but now we got it for sure.
All right, we're on the same page. That's a scary thought. But anyway, Mr. Chairman, members of the body, vote this up, vote this down. But, you know, in the last 5 years, we've dealt with the Park Service now. This is the third or fourth revision. Seems like we every time come back with a solution and they're not interested in purchasing us. All this does is says may accept sealed bids after December 31st, 2018 from private parties. With the condition, doesn't say we're going to sell it, just says the state land board may accept sealed bids from private parties. Kind of a little motivator, let them know that we're pretty interested about disposing these properties with that, Mr. as prescribed by the specifications of this body. So vote it up, vote it down.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I like the concept of this amendment, but I would rise in opposition to it. And I will tell you why, and we can clarify, and if I'm wrong, we can come back in second reading amendment. As I understand it, these are active admission lands that have a special requirement under the Constitution on how we dispose of them. I don't think we can accept sealed bids. I think there's a process. We have to have an auction, and that's a process that's set up for it. So let's clarify that, and if, in fact, we don't need it, then I'd be glad to help sponsor this in the second reading amendment. But I think right now it may be out of line. I would ask you to defeat it.
Further discussion on the amendment? Further discussion on the amendment. The question is on standing or committee of the whole amendment number 1, the Senate File 88. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The amendment has failed. Back on the bill.
Question.
Is there further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, the question is on Senator Bebout's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 88, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 88 is passed Committee of the Whole.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again at 4:05.
Heard the motion. What is your pleasure? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. See you at 4:05.
How was that for enthusiastic support? You guys have been hauling. You guys shifted gears, went into hockey. Huh? 4:05. Oh. I'm going to go to your office.
Can I get out of here for a second?
Curtis?